Hello and welcome to Data Monitor Healthcare Podcast, where we dive into the latest developments in healthcare and medicine. I'm Flora, and this month I'm joined by Data Monitor Healthcare's Chief Editor, Ian.
Hello.
And together we have invited financial analyst Abby to join us and discuss the IRA Act and drug pricing policies in the US. Hi Abby, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. You're welcome. Good to be here.
So shall we start off by you briefly explaining to us what is the IRA Act and its current and future impact to the US drug pricing regime?
Sure. So the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 was basically signed on by President Biden in August of 2022, which has been the forefront of their campaign in going into presidency. So the main aim generally is to basically aid Medicare that they've been running through the country as a whole and to help seniors over the age of 65 years old in their Medicare and Medicaid situations. So I think we're all aware that the drug pricing situation in the US has been a little bit tricky and quite forefront for the pharma companies at the moment, where pricing is actually just off the scale completely if you actually take it as a standalone and compare it to other countries that have aid for their senior citizens. So ideally, in a nutshell, that is what the Inflation Reduction Act is going to do. And as of the beginning of 2024, what they've done is they've looked at their medical situation or prescription drug, which is Part D of Medicare, and they've accessed 10 drugs that potentially are costing the government the most part of money. And I think it's almost a third of government spending at the moment. And what they've done with these 10 drugs is they're going back directly to the pharma companies and just saying that, look, we need to reassess the situation and bring it in line with every other countries that, for example, in the EU, you can look at Switzerland, you can look at Germany pricing, all the top major countries that usually have competitor pricing, and just say, look, we need to bring this down because it's costing senior citizens that are not working way, way too much money. I think on average, if you have a look at Medicaid spending, we're looking at out of pocket of £8,000 a year. And that's with people that even have insurance. So yeah, effectively what the government are doing are just saying, look, there's 10 drugs that are on prescription basis. We need to bring down the prices. And the first drugs that they looked at were Medicaid Part D, as I mentioned earlier. There are 10 drugs in there. So they're starting with those 10 drugs this year. They're going to move to another 15 drugs in 2025, 2026 that are Part A and B, and then another 15 again in Part D. And the plan is to extend it out to 20 more drugs every consecutive year after that, basically. So with this, what would happen then for the citizens? So effectively, they're sort of moving to say, look, the whole reason that we have pharmaceutical companies is to help people, so not just basically get out like pocketed by it. So what they're going to do, they're going to cap the out-of-pocket spending for Medicaid Part D and people that are enrolled with it. What they've already done so far as well is they've brought down insulin, who was actually, I think at one point one of the analysts was telling us that it was $300 in insulin, so they're capping it down to $35 now, which is a significant decrease. And I read somewhere that the cost of this company just to make a vial is only $10. So they were having over 100 times more markup on the prices of this drug and obviously gaining revenue from it. So that's a major thing that's happened already. So they're also eliminating cost sharing for adults on vaccine covers. So that will really help their vaccine programs that they're trying to expand as well, especially in children, as we know recently. Effectively, senior citizens and citizens that need prescription drugs would have more access to this medication and would be paying out of pocket far less than what they have at the moment. Yeah, so hopefully that explains a little bit of what the government are trying to do with all this spending.
Thanks for that overview, Abby. Aside from vaccines you mentioned and also insulin for diabetes, what other diseases are going to be impacted at this first stage?
Yeah, I think what they've decided to do when they looked at these drugs, that they were just saying, okay, of the people that are on Medicaid Part D, how many of them are on prescription drugs? So they looked at coronary problems, so heart failure, and diabetes was the top one on that. Blood clots, coronary artery diseases, and heart failure, as I mentioned. There was one, rheumatoid arthritis. They have Imbruvica, which is blood cancer, and also psoriasis, that's Stelara. So I believe Johnson & Johnson have two of the top drugs on that. So yeah, their lawyers have been heavily trying to counteract this at the moment. But yeah, it's quite interesting to see, because I think if you actually have a look at the percentage of people that are on Medicaid just under this 10 drugs, I believe that 46% of them, and that's a really high amount. And even if you look at these drugs individually, seven of them, just beginning of this year, they've already increased their prices higher than price on inflation at the moment. So that's one thing the government are really trying to hit on, is if you're increasing the price of your drug higher than inflation rates, what they're also doing now is telling these companies directly in the new IRA Act what they have to do is start paying back rebates to the government. And in that way, what it will do is people that are paying for insurances, they will have a co-insurance policy as of 2023, where if they have increased the drug prices, they will have that given back to them in a way. So yeah, it's quite interesting to see. And the reason I actually highlighted this in this podcast is just in my team alone, we're actually covering forecasts for five of those 10 drugs that would have a pricing change as of, I think they're going through obviously the legislations at the moment, but they're planning to put this ahead of the beginning of 2026. So it'll be interesting for us to see how the updates and the forecasts that we do at Data Monitor as well are going to be impacted on this. So we started sort of, yeah, kind of looking around this and keeping an eye out for it, really. And the one thing I wanted to highlight as well that's really important is, out of all these 10 drugs, just having a look, I think based on 2021 results, the US itself, say for US is at 100%, even if you look at Australia, France, Japan, even Switzerland, the prices of these same drugs in those countries are minimum at a third of it. And if you dive a little bit deeper, so one of the drugs I really wanted to highlight, which is in high use, is Jardiance in the US. And that itself, on a list price, so take away your rebates, your discount and everything in the US, it's still five times higher than Switzerland, and that's included of the discounts and rebates on it. So, and obviously with type 2 diabetes, which is Jardiance's used for, we know that there's an increasing prevalence around the world. So for that drug particularly to be five times higher after discount and rebates have been taken off just shows how pricing, pharma pricing in the US really needed to be looked at a long, long time ago. But I guess it's taken sort of us going into an inflation at the moment for the government to actually reassess it. So I think it's quite a point in time that this is all happening now.
That's super interesting. You mentioned that you're going to expect your forecasts, obviously, to change from 2026 if this is put through the legislation. Could you give us a bit of a brief forecast of how do you think that outlook will be for US pricing?
Sure. I think initially when they looked at these drugs to come, well, this 10 drugs that they were bringing to play into the legislation, what they did was they looked at drugs that didn't have any generic competition in the market as of yet and won't have it in the next, I think, 5 years or so. And for biologics, I think they had to be in the market for already 11 years, if I'm not mistaken. And I think the other one was that it would have to be a small molecule, it has to be 7 years. So really, these pricing that are going to take change in America, if you look at it from a forecast point of view, all of these drugs technically would still have quite a big, an extensive market share when it comes to being forefront leaders in their game, especially with the diabetes drugs that we're looking at and more actually coming into market at the moment as well. So what I think is going to happen potentially is we're going to see market shares being lost quite a bit or even sooner when it comes to the US. I think the pricing are definitely going to be reassessed, but pharma companies are pushing back on this. But I don't think effectively, also depending on which government takes over next, effectively, they're going to still have to reduce the pricing. So I actually think market share is going to come down. potentially competitions might come through in the market maybe sooner, or they'll pump in more money into research being drawn sooner for other companies. So I guess the monopoly of these companies might be diminishing slightly. So I think that's one forecast that I think would be interesting to see in terms of the US market and these companies trying to hold their status, I guess, in the different indications. Yeah, but hopefully that answers it a little bit. And then in terms of pricing, I think what we're going to see is, rather than a massive gap between, say, for example, the five EU in the US or even Japan in the US, rather than having five times more expensive or eight times more expensive, we're going to see a more narrower gap between that margin as well. But with the price going down, effectively, revenues in these countries will also go down. So I guess that's where the companies itself have been pushing for this. It's quite interesting to see the debates that are happening at the moment. And because most of these companies that from these 10 drugs, I think Janssen, Janssen, Novo, AstraZeneca, Novartis, they've already gone back with a counteroffer. And literally all of the counteroffers pretty much have had a pushback from it, which I think is quite interesting, because they're saying that basically as a whole, we're going to have less revenue, we're going to pump less into research and development. That just means we're halting medicine getting into the community faster. So that's kind of one of the approach and debate they're taking, when really we actually know most of these companies have made billions of dollars of revenues already this year. So it'll be interesting to see where they drive shift and focus to the pipeline drugs, I guess, how many more mergers and acquisitions they're going to take on board just to make up for the revenue loss if these pricing really hit the lower ranges. Because you've got to remember, this first 10 drugs as well, they are prescription drugs as well. So people are going to be needing it. And I think I read a fact earlier, which is a little bit sad, that a fifth of the residents that are on Medicaid, they're effectively not putting in for their prescriptions as often anymore, or they've told their prescriptions that they're not really getting access to the drugs because the pricing has gone up. And in fact, they're also actually using other people's Medicare or Medicaid prescription. So hopefully, yeah, this is sort of kind of from a more sustainable, I guess, outlook, will be sort of better for, yeah, I guess, the residents of the US.
With what you mentioned, the companies that you mentioned, a lot of them are obviously worldwide companies that sell across, with the US being a big market, but they have lots of other markets as well. Do you think there's a possibility they could raise prices in other markets if they're forced to lower them in the US?
Yeah, potentially, to be honest, because I guess if they are missing out from revenues in one region, they will either look to expand, or they probably have to reassess the strategy on pricing as a whole. You know, it's harder to do that in the EU with the legislations that have been put in place. But if anything, I think if it's almost like a wake-up call, I guess, because the pricing power of pharma drugs in the US has just been quite an interesting topic for a long time to come. And if anything, I think it's surprising that it's taken them this long to realize that something is need to change, because it's one of the countries that at the moment don't have some sort of like, for us here in the UK, we have the NHS, and we have prescription drugs for people that are elderly or need care or have ongoing problems. But the US has just not seen this at all for a very long time. I think one of the Reuters report that I read that even now, with everything that's happening, there's 35 new drugs that have launched in the US, just new ones as of 2023, were 35% higher, just their pricing compared to 2022, especially in their rare diseases. So looking at this, before it would cost 222, I think as a median, it was costing a patient £222,000 a year, and now it's gone up for the same drug over $300,000 a year. Sorry. So we can see that even before this legislation coming in place, they are still trying to make up as much money as they can from the US market. So I think there might be changing strategy, but I think the pushback on that strategy from all the other countries might be heavy on them. So they probably will have to sort out what's going on in the US first, I think, before hitting on all these countries. And I know, for example, there's a lot of generics that are coming into the market. We've started seeing companies already losing a lot of revenue because of that. So as more generics come into market, they'll have to change the strategy. Now they have this pushback on pricing. They'll have to, I think, reassess the strategy again. But I think going and raising prices in various other countries, even though they might try, would be quite a difficult thing to do with sort of, like I said, sustainability coming in, ESG coming in, trying to look at the patient's outlook nowadays and not letting the pharma companies necessarily take advantage of that. I think that'd be like a hard thing to do now from other countries as well. But it'd be an interesting one to see what they do try, though. But we can't really know for sure until, I guess, this gets put into play and they see how that affects the company balance sheets as well.
Yeah, I guess following on from that, I was just wondering if you're aware if any of these companies have released their proposed strategies for this, or to combat this kind of issue, or if this isn't something you'd be expecting to hear from the companies until 2026 or so.
Yeah, that is interesting, actually. I mean, from what I have gathered, they're at the process now of basically lawyers coming into an agreement with this. And I think how most of the major companies that I have seen combated this is to try and raise their balance sheets and revenue through merger and acquisitions of smaller companies. So we've seen AstraZeneca do a lot of this, and I think we've seen recently it was the merger and acquisitions just of last year of pharma companies was about $136 billion or something. So that's definitely going to help these companies in terms of having healthy revenue come through. But specifically to counteract these prices dropping, I think they probably would try and reassess their rebate structure and everything else throughout the whole of the US. Yeah, I would guess so. But yeah, no, it's just interesting to see how companies are counteracting their loss, not just from this, I guess. I guess the big one also have loss from their patent. So yeah, it's definitely going to be a game changer because we've only started with 10 drugs for now. But in the next 5 years, if they add on 20 drugs a year, that's just going to escalate massively. But this is coming in at the right time, though, because just in 2024, beginning of the quarter in 2024, I think they increased prices of 48 drugs in Part B ahead of inflation. And I think 46 in Part D, which is what we're looking at the moment. So I guess, yeah, it's kind of putting more pressure on these pharma companies to have plans in place, but definitely want to look out for.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how this all plays out. I mean, it particularly stood out to me, as you mentioned, Imbruvica on that list, which competition they have coming up in the chronic lymphocytic leukemia market anyway at the moment. So,
yeah, I think that's what the panic's going to be, because they're not just looking from one aspect of this. It's in terms of competitors as well, because that's the argument that a lot of the lawyers are making at the moment. It's just you're diminishing our competitive status as well when you reduce the price cost, because once they do this now, there's no turning back. I guess what Biden was trying to do in a nutshell is just say, look, we need to have some form of strategy in place and just have a pushback to the pharma companies, because they effectively were just going to the market. And based on how they monetize on this, the more marketing they do, people in the US, you could just go and buy off counter. People are using Wegovy for weight loss now rather than actually using it because you have a problem that you get prescription for. So I guess Biden's just looking at this being, we need to have some sort of strategy and a plan put in place. And it's just not a free market anymore in terms of going in and this is our price. So they, now the pharma companies, what they're doing is they're like, if you have reduced the prices now, that's going to set as a threshold for any new drugs also coming into market. So actually well noted that they're not doing this for orphan drugs, I guess, for that reason. But this just means that it also gives, I guess, generics coming in more competition, or people that are really trying to break through that market now, potentially, yeah, it will just diminish competition for them. So I guess that's where these major pharma companies are having a little bit of a worry as well. I just think it's all quite interesting, really, because I think with this taking place in the next 5 years, and depending which government take hold or have the next reign in America, it'd be interesting to see how then they also put this plan into action, I guess, or continue with it moving forward.
Yeah. Do you see that as a potential turning point, a potential sticking point, that there's a presidential election at the end of this year, and this is very much a Joe Biden proposal? Do you think, think it might change if the result goes a certain way?
I think so. I think potentially if Trump does take over, I guess the Republicans weren't really pushing forward for this at all to begin with. And this was definitely a very forefronted Joe Biden. This is what I'm going to do to sort of change the outlook of the country. And he has been trying. And to be fair, hats off to him. He has pushed on for it. I think if the next presidential, if the Republicans do get elected, I think what they can't completely dismiss what has already been put into play, because the act is already there and the changes that they're wanting to take place is already happening. I think maybe there might be a pushback in terms of timeline slightly, or maybe in terms of also the agreement that's taking place. And I know Trump loves his tax regulations and all of that. So I think that might be where the differences then come in. Maybe they would agree on a tax rebate that is slightly less compared to what Joe Biden would have agreed for. Maybe we'd see that. But to completely eradicate this whole process and the acts coming through and the aid that's been given to Medicaid and the changes that they've taken, don't think you can completely discard it. Because I think what they're trying to forecast at the moment, that at the end of 2030, that this would be saving the government at minimum $300 billion, which is what I highlighted earlier. This is actually, this Medicaid program is almost a third of government spending. So in a roundabout way, you're sort of helping the government as well with this. But so yeah, I think that's potentially sort of what I'd see happening, but it'll be interesting in a year's time to see who's taken over after all the debates that'll be happening in the summer.
Yeah, it definitely feels like this is a space to be watched. I mean, hopefully in the long run we're going to get see those benefits come out for the American citizens in Medicare.
I was going to say as well, definitely see interesting to see what other drugs they put in the next round, because this covers quite a significant indication group. But now they've just added Wegovy into Medicaid actually this week for people that have heart problems. So Wegovy itself, I think when I actually had a look at the cost and what it would cost them, I think it was gonna cost the government $27 billion a year. And that's a fifth of the cost of what they're spending on Medicaid already. So if you actually crunch the numbers down, potentially they're gonna be, I think that if the Biden presidency takes over the next stage as well, I think when they realize how much money that they're gonna also save the government, and whilst they're aiding citizens, there's definitely going to be a heavier push on this. But yeah, I just thought when I looked at the numbers how significant they were.
Cool, thank you Abby, that's been super interesting having you come on this podcast this month with us and talk us through some of this stuff. It's definitely going to be something to watch over the upcoming years and see how this space transforms. So yeah, thank you for joining us today.
And yeah, no problem, thanks for having me, it's been a pleasure.
And thanks to all the listeners for tuning in to Data Monitor Healthcare's March podcast.